You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 6, Episode 40. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario. I'm joined by Jonathan Kuline in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
And that's, aren't you going to say, how's it going?
And also, how's it going?
And how's it going? Yes, all right. So, I mean, it's not available today, so it's just going to be the two of us today. So we do have some fact check this week. In fact, we got some fan contributed fact check this week as well. But anyway, so I think I looked this up before, but I looked up again. We were talking about Omega, or Amiga, as they say on the show, is voiced by Michelle Ang. And we had said last week that it was the same voice actor, but apparently Emery Carr is voiced by Keisha Castle Hughes. So apparently it's not the same voice actress.
Yeah, so I was assumed it was the same person because it's a very similar voice, but yeah, good to know.
Yeah. And I was talking last week about another space station in peril trope that I had seen, and that was in the War of the Worlds, the British, the BBC version. With Gabriel Byrne, season 3 had the space station in peril trope. Had to do with, you know, the alien invasion and stuff like that. It was affecting the space station. They were noticing, or ISS was noticing things. And without giving any spoilers, that's all I'm going to say for now. And then because I was talking about Constellation, the show on Apple TV, it was so hard to follow in the later episodes. I didn't realize that I'd actually seen the last episode. That's how convoluted and strange it was. So it started out okay, but kind of went weird. And this bit of headline, this fact check is from Keen. He pointed out that Bye 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 was sung by NSYNC, not the Bad Street Boys, which is important for some reason. I don't know why.
I was going to say, aren't they the same thing? I don't
know. Yeah. And then the Tell Me Why commercial is the commercial I was remembering. You know, it's the, and the woman, they say that she says she wants to get rid of her soap or something like that, or get rid of some stain, and that they're like, tell me why. And the poster on the wall starts singing to her. There's a video here for those of you who really care. And the funny thing is that the reason why I had the bye-bye thing stuck in my head is the last line of the last two lines of the commercial are, she says, oh, I guess that order went bye-bye. And they go, nope, not us. So, ha ha ha. Ha ha ha. And we're going to jump over to the headlines. I'm a little confused because I thought we already covered this story months ago.
We did. We talked about the discovery of this, but we didn't talk about the final outcome of this. That's why I wanted to circle back on it. So what Tim's mentioning,
it's follow-up then. It's not headline.
That's true. Well, we don't have a follow-up section, so we're just going to cover it here.
All right.
So I think, Tim, you had raised this, that the long-lost model of the USS Enterprise from the original 1960 Star Trek series had gone missing and had turned up on eBay. And then the story was that they were trying to verify that this is actually the model that used to sit on Gene Roddenberry's desk that had been missing for a very long time. So it had gone through this process over the past few months of being verified. They actually took it to an auction house that verified its authenticity. And this week, the model, so this is the model that they used in the opening credits, the one that sort of zooms towards you. This was not like the full-sized one that they used to do for like action scenes and stuff like
that. That's at the Smithsonian.
That's the one at the Smithsonian. This one is a smaller model, and it sat on Gene Roddenberry's desk because they weren't using it anymore, but it was the one that sort of zooms towards you in the original opening credits. And it had been missing for decades, like almost 50 years. And this last week, it was finally returned to the Roddenberry family. So I wanted to just sort of close the loop on this story that they have verified this was, in fact, the actual one that was missing all this time and is now back in the hands of Rod Roddenberry, who is, of course, the EP on a lot of these new Trek series and is back involved carrying his family legacy forward. So, yeah, really kind of a cool story. I don't know. It doesn't say in here sort of what his plans are. He says, you know, I can't wait to figure out how we're going to share it with my extended family and Star Trek fans around the world, Roddenberry's statement said, but we look forward to making that announcement. So hopefully maybe we'll get a chance to see that one too. Maybe that one will end up in the Smithsonian or another museum where we can all enjoy it. But nice to know that this sort of piece of Trek history is has been recovered, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see more of it in the future.
I kind of thought they were going to replace it with a 3D model rendered in high res.
Yeah, is it just like, what is that, stick that in the cabinet and see what happens?
Yeah, have a floppy disk with a file on it.
That's exactly.
The reason why I say that is because I think I've probably talked about this many, many times before, but, you know, and it's funny that this is the ship that was filmed for that original thing. I was lamenting years ago that I've gotten so used to the new 3D rendered models in the quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, original series A New Hope, because they went back and they redid all the Enterprise shots, and you know, I remember I've watched that original series so many times on TV that the ship coming towards you in the scene where it says, you know, Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner and DeForest Kelly, it was so rendered. It was almost like the trick they did in Kubrick movies where they had a cardboard cutout and they just zoomed the camera in on the cardboard cutout, right? Because it looked to me like a shape as opposed to an actual ship. And I kind of wish I could see. I guess it's probably online somewhere, an original version without the rendered ships. I think I've seen it online, but that, because to me, I've seen that so many times on TV and, you know, after school kind of thing, or on Saturday mornings. It used to be on at noon on Saturday mornings on CBC. And it just became like an abstract as opposed to an actual discernible ship per se, right? So, and yeah. I didn't think I told you before, when we went to the Smithsonian in 73, I think, I was running around Washington with an Archie Bunker for President t-shirt on as a kid. But I remember seeing the Enterprise at the Smithsonian, and then flash forward like to 2017, 2015, I guess, we went to New York I was at Dulles Airport, and I went to the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, and the Enterprise was being prepared, and like they had like a sort of a, you could see all the stuff they're working on in the back from like up on high kind of thing. But apparently it's now on the exhibit. I've not seen it since it's been restored, but I do remember seeing it when I was a kid. It was pretty big. It was like 6-7 feet long.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a picture. I actually have a photo on my iPhone of them, of it disassembled, and they were putting it together. Maybe that'll be the show art this week. Who knows? Anyway.
Cool. Into the archives.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, new trailer dropped today. For those of you who are fans, there is a new Transformers animated movie coming later this year called Transformers 1. And so the trailer dropped today. It's sort of a CGI movie. This is not live action, but it's got a pretty good cast. It's got Chris Hemsworth, Brian Tyree Henry, Scarlett Johansson, Keegan-Michael Key, Steve Buscemi, Lawrence Fishburne, John Hamm. So this is a pretty star-studded deal. So like they're not skimping out here. And yeah, I watched the trailer. I don't know. Maybe I feel a little disconnected from the Transformers franchise, rather, because, yeah, I almost said it. But I really haven't felt very invested in all of that. Like, I still love what I love, but I feel like it's kind of leaving me behind, and that's okay. You know, I'm probably not the demo they're going for with this anyways, although I'm sure they are playing on the nostalgia factor. This is sort of the, you know, the origin story of Optimus Prime and Megatron, the two sort of main characters, the rivals who turned into, you know,
it's like, blood enemies. Doctor Professor X and Magneto.
Kind exactly. Of thing, right? Yeah. These are the sort of the will be the leaders of their respective clans, the Decepticons and the Autobots. And I mean, it looks good and it looks fun. It looks like it's got some humor to it, which is nice. That's one of the things I always kind of enjoyed about the old Autobots, the old Transformers series when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the series that they've done subsequently is I tend to like it a little bit more when it's got a little levity to it. It's not just, you know, robots punching each other.
I mean, like the Michael Bay version, sort of.
Yeah, I didn't love those, although they had some moments, but didn't love those. But even just they've done animated versions, subsequent animated versions from the 1980s version. They must have done easily 6 or 7, maybe even more, maybe 8 or 9 or more series over the years in different iterations. The ones that really kind of always struck me, my sort of favorite modern one is one that I watch with my kids, which is called Simply Transformers, the animated series, came out in the early 2000s. And it was, it was funny. It was silly. It was very just sort of, a little more fun and light. This one has a little bit of that, although it does seem like it sort of ramps up as the trailer goes on. Like, this is going to get serious. We're getting weapons. We're doing stuff. So we'll see. But I don't know. I definitely don't think this is a theater movie for me, but I definitely will give this a watch at some point, I think.
Yeah, I tried to watch the trailer. I'm not really interested at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little beyond your time, too. It's sort of the novel.
Yeah, I started watching the new Transformer movie, though. I think the one with the animal, I don't know what you call those, the animal bots or whatever.
Yep.
Haven't made it through yet. So
yeah.
But yeah, I watched part of this one, and it was one thing I didn't like about this one was they have like Thomas the Tank Engine faces that move, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of Thomas the Tank Engine meets, I don't know, it's just strange. And I, you know, I guess I probably should have stayed for the jokes, but they didn't have me after like 30 seconds. So.
Okay. Like I say, not everything's for everybody.
Nope.
Next up, a couple of quick ones. So new casting information, and I wish I had been here for this one, because I know he's the resident expert on this stuff. But Sonic the Hedgehog 3 is coming for the people who are fans. This is the sort of a live action / CGI version of the Sonic the Hedgehog character. Sonic 3 has cast a pretty big name as one of the main characters. So Keanu Reeves is going to be joining. Is going to be joining Sonic the Hedgehog 3 as Shadow. So Shadow the Hedgehog, again, for people who know the franchise, a pretty big character, has been around for a long time. And in addition to Idris Elba being part of this, and all the famous voices we've already got, Jim Carrey's, of course, plays the live action Dr. Robotnik. We're getting Keanu Reeves is going to be Shadow the Hedgehog. And
does he play it as Jim Carrey? Like, you can see that it's Jim Carrey?
Yeah, I mean, he's wearing a comedic costume and mustache and stuff like that. But yes, it's definitely him. So. But I mean, if you're into this, and I suspect when we speak to Jaime next, we will we'll get his confirmation that this is cool. But this is it's not a small deal. Keanu's still one of the biggest working actors, so yeah, big deal.
Yeah, I guess I am a huge Sonic fan, but from the original games, I've never actually taken in the movies yet, so I probably should do that at some point.
Yeah, and they've done some good animated series over the years. Again, when my children were younger, we watched some of that stuff together. There's some that are better than others. I think they've done, again, probably at least a half a dozen different animated series over the years. And a couple of them I really quite enjoyed with the kids. A couple of them are a little puerile, but again, they're not for me. They're for them. And so, they're pretty good. In our ongoing coverage of the state of the streaming wars, interesting news today that Netflix is no longer going to report its subscriber numbers. So they had their earnings meeting today, and they released their earnings and their subscribership. And so they did say that they gained 9 million subscribers net in the last quarter and are at 270 million globally. And that is exceeding expectations. So good for them. But they also said that this year will be the last year that they report this as a metric. They're not going to tell people how many people are subscribed anymore. And that's a weird one because obviously they're a company. They can do what.
Aren't they the leader in the industry though?
They are. I'm not sure what there are some quotes in here from the CEOs, obviously, Ted Sarandos and Greg Peters talking about, is this a relevant measure? Peters says that the number of subscribers has been a decreasingly relevant measure for the health of the company's business. He said that, the paid sharing initiative is more relevant and their advertising is more relevant. I'm not sure I buy all of it. To me, it seems like, if you're a stakeholder, a stockholder, chances are all you care about is, did you meet your expectations? Is the stock value high? Where are the earnings and whatever? It does seem particularly interesting, though, that a company that basically makes its hay on the number of eyes that are on it isn't going to report the number of eyes on it anymore. So interesting. And I wonder if this will obviously spark a trend across rival platforms, because that is kind of the thing that we use to compare them is like, how many eyeballs have they got, right?
Yeah. I think I made money on Netflix, it looks like.
That's a good thing.
Well, because when they tanked, when they started doing the review, I think I bought one or two shares. I can't remember, but looks like they're up 609 today, according to the stock app on the good old iPhone. So interesting. Good investment.
Yeah, definitely. And last thing here is going to tie a little bit into something we're going to talk about later, but the new Fallout series that is now on Amazon Prime dropped all the episodes, all the episodes came last week, right?
Yep.
And they've already announced they're going to go ahead with the season 2. So that's good news if you're a fan of that. And I think maybe we'll have a little discussion about that in a little bit.
Yeah, definitely a fan. I mean, I'm surprised. I guess they have to wait till people react to it to decide if they want to renew it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be to piggyback so that, if you were on the fence about watching it, and I was on the fence about watching it, maybe this is the thing that tips you to like, well, at least I know they're going to do more than just this, right? So I think sometimes that's sort of the decision behind these things is, hey, we'll tell people now that this is already out so that they'll want to go and check this one out, right?
Yeah, well, you get two thumbs up from me for sure.
Cool.
We'll talk about that later, like you said.
Sounds good.
Alrighty. Well, we're at the main part of the show since we've got a short show this week, and we're talking about Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 4, Face the Strange.
Which, even that title, when I first saw it pop up on my screen this morning, was I looked at it and thought, Face the Strange. Isn't strange a euphemism for like a non-familiar sexual partner? Anyways, that
is it? No, I don't know.
Yeah, getting some strange, I believe, is the term for
Oh, really?
Sleeping with someone who you're not familiar with.
Maybe so. It's a Transformers thing. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that one again. the name just sort of caught me. I was like, well, that's a strange way to put that, but yeah. So, elevator pitch.
Well, I didn't really think about an elevator pitch this week, but it's let me just see if I can do it. I mean, get a better helmet. I don't know. that's one thing that stood out for me in the show. I don't know, just another timey-wimey one, right? So it's hard to sort of pin down what to call this one, right?
Yeah, I went with the obvious Charles Dickens. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. This one was.
It also had a bit. Now that I think about it, had the tinge of the. I think there was a Prince of Persia and I think Laura Croft in I think Terminator. was that show?
Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider 3, I think she had a scene where she had to fight herself. Right. And in Prince of Persia, he has to as well. And the trick is not to fight yourself.
Right? Well, the best version of that being Scott Pilgrim versus the World, right? Where Scott ends up sort of defeating the bad guy. And then he's, you have to face the ultimate nigga Scott. And he has to fight himself. And in the end, they just like make friends and decide to go for brunch together.
Okay. Yeah.
He's a good guy. We're going to get brunch next week.
Cool. Yep.
But yeah, this episode was, it was actually kind of well done because it was almost like a clip show in its way, right? Like it kind of recapped where we were, some of the milestone moments. It goes back, it takes us through this timey-wimey. So obviously the episode centers on this time bug that is embedded itself inside of Discovery that keeps Rayner and Burnham and Stamets traveling through this time loop and keep getting reset in different eras of the Discovery's existence over the course of time. But because they're doing that, it is kind of for us, especially in this, the final season of Discovery, it goes backwards and forwards, and it kind of connects the dots between, you know, the battle versus control, the Red Angel, Burnham when she was just first on board. And then it even ties us into, and this was kind of an interesting part of this episode, was into the Short Treks episode, the Calypso, right, which was the one that had kind of been hanging out there for so long. We weren't really sure where that fit in. Did we cover
whether that was the same voice actress on that episode as Zora in the actual, I think it is, right?
It is. It is the same woman that does the voice for Zora in Calypso, as well as Zora now.
Calypso, yeah, that's the episode, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so just to jump ahead, that's one of the sort of Easter eggs of this is the Calypso tie-in. So for those who are struggling to remember their Short Treks from 5 years ago, the Short Treks were these little sort of 10-minute episodes they did, bridging season one and season two. This one was a real sort of standout because in it, the Discovery itself is sort of floating, abandoned in space. It comes across a survivor in a shuttle pod, brings him on board, a man named Kraft, I believe it was. And they end up sort of having this, you know, the ship has sort of gained sentience, but we don't know why. And there's this sort of kind of romance kind of thing going on between them. But the real question for Trek fans was, why is the Discovery stranded? Where is it? What happened?
And when did it get sentient and that stuff?
And where did it get sentient and all these sort of questions. So we sort of thought, oh, over the course of this series, they will sort of clarify where and when and how and all this stuff. So through the battle with control and season three stuff, we definitely got ahead, or I guess it's season two, we got to Zora, right? So we know, you know, how the ship gained sentience, but we never really kind of got where and how the Discovery ended up where it was. And so in this episode, when they flashing back and forth through time, you know, at one point they end up back when Discovery's being built back at the shipyards in San Francisco, and then they flash way into the future and it's, you know, 1,000 years further ahead, or not 1,000 years. Let me see. I wrote it down.
30 years.
30 years. Yeah. Yes. 3218. Yeah. They flash forward 30 years and Burnham and Rayner are on the ship and Zora is in the state that we find it during that Short Treks episode. And, you know, again, jumping ahead, but the quote from Zora is, "You died, you all died." And she reveals that the reason why the ship was abandoned is because the Breen got a hold of the progenitor's technology that they're racing around trying to find this year. And that they used it to basically destroy the Federation and Starfleet. Yeah. And that's why we ended up with Discovery in this state. Now, the episode of Short Treks, I think, is supposed to happen even farther in the future. I think it's actually like several hundred years, if not a millennia, further ahead. But at least we have an answer as to sort of, now we knew how Zora became Zora and became the voice of the ship, but now we also know how in that timeline that's how they ended up there.
Well, it's one of the stories, because if they do solve the problem of the day, if you want to call it that, that won't be the outcome. This particular instance of Zora being abandoned in the destroyed Federation.
Yeah. And she specifically says it's because it took so long for us to figure out how to get out of the time loop. By the time they got there, it was too late. And Maul and Locke had found the technology, and then they had sold it to the Breen, and the Breen had done all this damage. And so, yeah, so by getting out of this loop faster, and in the end, we find out it's only been 6 hours that they're stuck in this loop. They managed to somehow undo that possible future. Although, again, I think this is now supposed to be the motivating factor for Burnham and Rayner, is they've seen what will happen if the progenitor's tech falls into the wrong hands. So now the urgency is even higher because they know the stakes are essentially the end of everything they know if the progenitor's technology falls into the wrong hands.
Yeah, and as you know, I really love these sort of timey-wimey Star Trek episodes where they get stuck in these loops. But I really didn't like the sort of moral of the story ending, you know, where she proves to Rayner that this is why we're nice to each other, why we respect each other. And he does, you know, apologize to a few people after the fact who probably went, "What now?" You know?
Yeah, they kind of needed to close the loop on that, right? Because last week we kind of got a little bit of movement on Rayner appreciating the value of. You know, getting to know the people versus just, you know, getting to know what he needs to know. And of course, it comes back around when at one point they're faced with a younger version of Burnham and a younger version of Reese, who are pointing their phasers at them. And they're like, "Hey, listen, I actually do know something about you because I was listening and I actually did learn that," you know. So you're right. It's a little on the nose. Obviously, you know, they sort of set it up as, "Well, I don't really need to know this." And they're like, "Well, yes, you do." But, you know, it was effective. And as a bonus, we got to find out what Lieutenant Commander Reese's name is, which we didn't know until now. He's Jen Reese, G-E-N. So circling back to the pew, 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 I don't know if you had anything different. I had the Burnham versus Burnham fight, which are always fun to do.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, they did a good job, as good as they could do, in trying to replicate the look of Burnham from season one, where she's kind of got that sort of top poof of hair on the top of her head. Very different style than obviously she's wearing her long dreadlocked look now, which is beautiful. She has this sort of knockdown, drag him out fight, but it's kind of awesome in that they, you know, they kind of are stalemating each other, right? Like it's more like if you were a trained combatant and were fighting yourself, that felt kind of true, right? Like this is somebody who is a good fighter.
By the same token, though, that you would hope that in 5 years the senior would have learned, you know, through continued training, new techniques or whatever. But yeah, they were blow for blow matching each other. And I guess I assume they probably used her stunt double as the second actress, right?
But, I would assume,
They obviously do that for body doubles and stuff like that. But which reminds me of a pick I should probably add to. I'm going to do add that now that I'm thinking about it. But I think for me I always like to take Tig Notaro scene, so I'm going to go with her versus the helmets, right?
that was good. That was good. Yeah, she just steals every scene she's in. She's just been so consistently good in this series. She gets all the best lines. She's got this beautiful dry delivery that just absolutely crushes everybody around her. She must be very challenging to work with, because I'm sure you just have to bite a hole through your tongue. She's so dry and funny.
Yeah, I just watched her special on Netflix and her Hello Again. And she talks about her kids and how they perceive her and her wife Stephanie differently, right? Stephanie's the mommy, and and she's the kids refer to her as, "Oh, it's just her." So
yeah,
you know, no big deal, don't worry, it's not mommy, it's just her.
Yeah,
so it's kind of, but you know, that sort of deadpan delivery she does, it's actually a funny bit. I mean, if you don't get her humor, it's funny. The I guess 3/4 of the way through the special, you kind of get to the point where if you don't like Tig Notaro, don't watch that show, because it's she goes as far as she can go with how weird her humor is, right?
So, yeah.
Or how deadpan her humor is, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, and she's an envelope pusher. She always has been. She's very good at really kind of making you squirm in your seat a little bit.
Yeah, and the best time for us is she's at the airport and she's filming in Toronto. I wonder if she's filming in Toronto. And she says she went to the airport and she checked in, and the woman said, "You can go to the make-believe lounge now." So she has a whole joke about the make-believe lounge, which of course is the make-believe lounge.
Anyway. Easter eggs, there was a ton of stuff. Obviously, we covered the Calypso stuff, which was kind of the most significant. It kind of closes the loop on that, which is something I was really kind of hoping they would do this season, since they had left that lingering for quite a while. They refer to this little device that Maul. So obviously, we saw it in the end of the last episode of Maul.
So this is where recaps are good, kids. Yeah. If you don't watch the recaps, I missed the fact that Maul was in the last episode.
Yeah, she was right at the very end. It's the scene where Adira is still in the caves on Trill, and Maul basically tags Adira with this, what I think many, I know I did, assumed was a tracker of some kind.
Yeah, yeah. I might have recognized the scene where she, because you can, it's quite obvious they show her arm and the thing attaching to her arm, but. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Maul at all, but I don't know. I can't remember what the circumstances of how I watched it last week, but sometimes I watch it on my iPad, sometimes I watch it on TV, but it's different depending on the day. But I can, like, till I saw her today, I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah. So she tags Adira with this thing. This thing gets aboard the ship, but originally, again, I thought it was a sort of a tracker. They were going to be able to spy on them or whatever it was, but it turns out to be this time bug. And they refer to it in as the episode unfolds and they try and figure it out. They figure out that it's this thing called a Krenim chronophage, or a time bug. And the Krenim is a callback to a very excellent episode of Voyager. So this was the episode where the Kurtwood Smith, famously of That 70s Show, is this sort of guest star, and he is aboard this massive vessel that is basically trying to go through and erase entire timelines to try and find the correct timeline to restore his world. And they are the Krenim. And the episode is called Year from Hell. It's one of the better episodes of Voyager, where it's basically, you know, the Voyager, you know, the crew is trying to, you know, survive this. And in the end, they basically have to make this play to have this guy sort of, you know, use this device on himself in order to sort of reset the timeline. But it's great. And it was really an interesting callback to say that, you know, here we are in the 31st century and this, you know, bit of Krenim technology is left over from the Temporal Wars. And, you know, on the black market, you can buy these things as weapons. And, you know, they say that, you know, in the episode that they can, you know, they can keep you stuck in this loop for decades if you don't know how to get out of it. Now, luckily, in this episode, obviously, Burnham and Rayner are very clever people. Beyond that, they have Stamets, who, thanks to his tardigrade DNA, is actually sort of sees things out of time, yeah. Right? He's not affected by time travel. So then the three of them have enough brain power and savvy to figure out their way out of it. But that was a really interesting callback to Voyager as a
Kirkwood Smith point. Is also the president of the Federation in the Undiscovered Country.
He is, absolutely. He is. And and the bad guy, one of the main bad guys from RoboCop, excellent actor. So as we talked about this also for Easter eggs, I mean, it calls back basically throughout the episodes or seasons of Discovery. It's good in that, you know, you do kind of get a chance to look back and
it was an interesting way to recap the five seasons too, right?
Yeah. It was nice that they didn't do a clip show. They didn't just bring back a character and they talked about, oh, remember that time? They kind of sort of sprinkled it in there. It's actually a pretty enticing way. I must admit, I found myself watching all that and thinking, oh, I should go back and watch that whole thing with Control again. That part with Osiris was pretty good. And yeah,
I'm pretty sure. Like, I was thinking about that too, because a couple of things I thought it would be kind of interesting when they went to the Zora scene in 30 years in the future, if the guy was on the shift, Kraft or whatever his name was, right? That would have been kind of cool if they walked in and he's like sort of sitting at in the lunchroom having lunch or whatever, because that's what I remember about that show. But also the Stamets scene where Culber is sedating him and he says, I have to get back to the engineering. Right. I kind of want to go back and see, because I remember that scene. Right?
Yeah, because he gets impaled, right? He gets
and I wonder, his chest. Yeah, I wonder if he actually said that in the show, because it looked like it was reshot for this show, right?
Yeah, and yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of like, I mean, if they were smart enough to have planted these seeds throughout the whole show, like over the last 5 years, to plant these sort of little, because the Red Angel was a clear one. As soon as they said Red Angel, like, you know, we kind of all, everybody who's seen the show knows what that is. They didn't even show it, right, kind of thing. Maybe the effects around the ship was the same, because she does say she remembers it, right? So, yep. So I thought that was kind of cool the way they tied the Stamets thing in on it. Like I said, I always want secretly to have the writers and the producers be that smart that they would do things thinking about, you know, down the road we'll roll this into a show, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream. Although, you know, again, even if they just found a way to tie it back together, they did a very effective job of that. I mean, I feel like I've got closure on that, which had been kind of lingering out there for a while. So that's kind of a good thing. The other Easter egg, and it's not really an Easter egg, it's pretty out in the open, but Arium obviously returning is a pretty cool moment. A character, of course, we haven't seen the last couple of seasons. She died famously, you know, protecting the crew. But, you know, to have her come back and be so much herself, like to have that moment where Burnham, you know, our Burnham from the 31st century sort of say, you know, you're going to die, and here's how you're going to die. And to have Arium, who is of course a creature of logic, is just like, yeah, I would totally do that. That makes sense. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that was such an interesting sort of way to explore that. Yeah. And, you know, I saw a couple of things this afternoon. I was looking through on social to see what people were saying about this episode. And one person sort of said, well, you know, now, doesn't it skew things so that, like, she would be making that decision because Burnham planted in her head? And they explicitly say no. As soon as they reset the timeline by blowing the warp bubble and setting things right, there is no more sort of crossover, and she doesn't know that they interact and stuff like that, which is good, because that her sacrifice needs to be her sacrifice, and it would have been tarnished if they tried to take that away. So I'm glad they didn't do that.
And they gave her more lines in this show than she had in the entire series. Right?
Well, short of that last episode that she was in, yeah, pretty much, right? For the quotes...
Well, I'm going to go back. You missed a couple that I would... I'm calling time jumps an Easter egg.
Oh, beautiful.
We've had that in.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had that in as one of them. And then the nerve pinch. The Vulcan
nerve pinch. The nerve pinch is a great one.
It's the first time we've seen this, but, you know, of course, being Spock's, you know, stepsister...
Yeah.
She would have learned that from him, or... would have known about it from living on Vulcan, right?
Yep. Although you'd think that then the other version of her would also know that she would do that. But anyways, know your enemy, I guess. But that's good. Quotes. I mentioned the one, you died, you all died. That was a pretty impactful line. Like Zora is obviously like, oh my God, you're alive. The Reno line where Stamets is trying to figure out some of the hypotheticals by talking to a past version of Reno. And she looks at him and says, are you stuck in a time loop right now, Stamets?
Yeah.
Which is of course, like it's funny because in these episodes they're always like, you know, I can talk to this person and they'll be none the wiser. And of course that's immediately where someone as smart as Jet Reno would go, right?
Yeah,
like if you're asking me these hypothetical questions, that's probably why. And she sort of says it's facetiously, and she says that in the moment she's like, I'm just kidding with you, but you kind of get the impression that she's like, yeah, this could totally be happening, right?
Not are you feeling well, should you go to sick bay? It's like, are you stuck in a time loop?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, or, you know, maybe you need a break or something. No, she's just like, are you stuck in a time loop? It's funny how, you know, it fits the character so well that that's where her mind would go, right? When he's trying to get people out of the engineering so they can talk, and Stamets yells, there's been a spore breach, evacuate now or mushrooms will grow on your lungs. And he uses that line multiple times. It was very funny.
Yeah, yeah. And then the third time he uses it, he just says, I'm really grumpy, go.
Get out. Yeah, I'm really grumpy, get out. Yeah, that was pretty good. And then Stamets, you know, you try being the one to keep this ship together so we don't die and erase everything we've ever done from history. You know, the poor hard done by, it's like one of those Scotty lines from the original series, but just on like steroids, you know, like
or damage him. I'm a doctor, not a.
Yeah. You know. Right. It just felt like a very true to Trek line to come from Stamets, of course, the engineer. Right.
And I'm going to go back to Tignataro saying, get a better helmet.
Get a better helmet. Yeah, that's pretty good too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The only thing I really had for biggest question, I mean, this episode was sort of, again, it was a look back and also a chance for, you know, Rayner to sort of get himself back on track and get him and Burnham on the same page. So mission accomplished on all those fronts. There was a window of time there where, you know, theoretically somebody as technologically advanced, obviously Arium is a cybernetic being. Was there a chance for Arium to like download a memory file somewhere or something? Is there a possibility they could? I don't think you'd want that because I think you want Arium's noble sacrifice. I think that was a very fundamental part of the series, but it's possible.
I mean, if she stuck herself in a transporter buffer or something like that,
and well, or just
come back and
because she could back herself up, right? She could back up her memory. She wouldn't have her body, but she could theoretically do that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, it kind of, to me, spoke a little bit to the, you know, Data sacrifice in Nemesis. It spoke to a little bit of the sort of, you know, well, I know something bad is happening, so I can...
Body in the buffer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it does open the door, and it's almost a little bit of the Tasha Yar goes into the past with the old Enterprise-C kind of... Like, you can take things from an old timeline and make them new again. So there is a possibility that they could find a way to bring back Arium if they so chose.
Right.
Although, I would prefer they probably don't, just because as much as I thought the character was interesting, I don't think it's really beneficial to take her sacrifice out of the mix.
Yeah, and my big question is going to be, did they plant these seeds all along the way, like as I mentioned before?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to watch some of the behind-the-scenes stuff and see if they ever talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, it was didn't really propel the plot forward as far as that sort of overarching, you know, fill the puzzle thing. But I think that's good. I think, you know, when we talked about it previously, that's obviously a challenge with these kinds of seasons where it's, you know, got to find these pieces, put the puzzle together, find the clues, that kind of stuff. If you just do episode after episode of that, it does start to get a little tedious. So these little sort of sidetracks inside that are actually kind of welcome at this point. So I think I will take this digression quite well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now a word from our sponsor.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now back to the show.
That's it, eh? Should we move on to our watch list?
Yeah, I think so.
All righty. What have you got? Oh, I'm up first.
No, you're up first.
So I did watch Fallout. I tried to sip slowly, as we talked about this before. I really don't like all the episodes being dropped at once. So I watched one episode, then I waited the next day and I watched another episode, and so I basically went all the way up to say episode 7 or 8, and then I kind of closed off the loop and I finished off episode 8 today. But interesting that I was looking up Ella Purnell, who plays Lucy, is one of the main three characters in the story. She also plays Gwyn on Prodigy, and she's the voice of Jane. Jane is the in Invincible. She's the other. Who's it? The other superhero person.
Eve.
Yeah, that's Eve. Okay.
Jane is one of the characters that will come back around. So they did. Yes, she's had a small part in that so far.
And if you watch Yellow Jacket, she's the head cheerleader, Jackie.
Mm.
So yeah, she has a pretty important role in the story. But
so what makes this stand apart from sort of these dystopian post-apocalyptic kind of tropes of
Walton Goggins? Come on.
I love Walt Goggins. As you know, I'm a longtime Justified watcher. I know you recently caught up on that show, and you I think have probably a deeper appreciation for him now, because he's so magnetic.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Really does sort of hold up. I mean, I've always sort of seen Fallout, seen ads for it and seen sort of, I know it's a long running franchise. It's like 7 or 8 series of games or whatever, but really interesting. I think not having played the games, but I think they did a really successful sort of dealing with all the sort of technology and the different characters and stuff like that. And explaining the ghouls and all, how the how come people, not everybody's dead from the radioactivity, and mm-hmm. some of the more interesting incarnations of people in this thing. And of course they have to sort of have a person who ruins the whole thing for everybody. And that's kind of one of the main characters in this. And I really like the execution of this show, and sort of there's some characters that live a couple of hundred years, and again, how they'd get they do kind of plant some Easter eggs for future seasons, if there's going to be 1 or 2 seasons or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it does end on a pretty open-ended, it's not quite a cliffhanger, but it does end with an open-ended mission to chase after for the second season. Cause there is a MacGuffin in this one. That they have to. Have you seen it yet? Or
no, it's on my to-do list. I didn't make time for it this week.
So there is a MacGuffin that everybody's trying to get, and it's a pretty significant one. But still, it's then there's some hilarious characters in there. Like there's one of the guys plays the Knights of the Brotherhood of Steel, which are the big metal guys.
Mm-hmm.
They look like advanced stormtrooper kind of people.
Hmm.
They're pretty cool. I mean, it's kind of like Starship, like how a Starship Trooper should have been, sort of the one man spacesuits that people wear are supposed to wear in that show. Right. Which they didn't execute in the Starship Troopers movie at all, which I thought was really sad, but, these are pretty cool. They're kind of like Iron Man suits, I guess is another way to put it.
Yeah.
And the sort of 90s, what was that? The one with, the guy from The Mummy, Brendan Fraser,
mm-hmm.
the one where he wakes up and he's raised by
Blast from the Past. Yeah.
Yeah. He's raised by, his
Christopher Walken.
And kind of like that 50s sensibility.
Yep.
So the people who live in the vaults are, they're the rich people from our time who get to go and live in these vaults for, a couple hundred years or whatever, and they have these little societies and stuff like that. So there's lots of very interesting sort of, trying not to give away too much.
Yeah.
Very interesting sort of dynamics that happens between the people who live underground, the people who live on the surface, the people who survived radioactivity, So it's a fun romp. It's really well done. I mean, it's not, there's not a part of it where like I was talking about Constellation last week, where if I said, if you miss it, don't worry, you won't have missed much. Right. Even though it's great actors and very, very interesting special effects, the story just doesn't hold up. But well, it's so convoluted, it doesn't hold up. But this particular one, the story's good, the characters are good, the people portraying the roles are really good, the tech is super interesting. Like, they have the, I think it's called a Pit Boy or whatever, but it's a wristband, like a iPhone. It actually is an iPhone, actually, that I watched an interview with Ella Purnell on one of the late nights. But It's kind of like this game interface that they wear on their wrists. And I'm sure it's part of, you know, because it looks very sort of like, you know, mid-90s, early 2000s kind of game interface that they would have used to sort of, you know, bring up the panel and this is where your information center is. You know how the games used to always have that you know, discover things as you go kind of playing? I mean, because from what I can tell from the game shots that I've seen, it's kind of a first-person shooter game, right? In a post-dystopian thing. And I'm not sure if you play different characters, but because there are definitely three or four different groups of people in this series, right? Like I said, the ghouls, the vault people, and the Brotherhood of Steel, right? So,
yeah, my understanding of this, one of the things I've heard people say that they like about it is that it's set in the Fallout universe, but it doesn't follow the plot of any of the games.
Yeah,
it's kind of an adjacent kind of thing, which is good and bad. Obviously, if you really love the story, maybe you want to see it come, you know, brought to life as you have with some things like Last of Us. But in this case, they kind of took the concepts and the world and then told a story within that world, which I think opens up a lot of possibilities. I'm curious. I must admit, I don't know anybody who's an active or a longtime player, but I'd be curious to know what they think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad it's not a running around shooting zombies kind of. Because, I mean, that's The Walking Dead, right?
Well, it's been done to death, right?
Yeah, 12 seasons or whatever. I'm not watching any of that anymore. But yeah, I mean, and first-person shooters, like, it's a style of game that you know, obviously they're successful, but I think a small market of game players would like that kind of thing, right? Like, you used to play the Final Fantasy stuff where you have to sort of solve things mm-hmm. as well as have these sort of ridiculous fights with people where I shoot at you with my laser and then you shoot at me with your thing and then I lose so many points and you lose some, and like you're just playing, and just that just made no sense. It's like rolling the dice to, I guess, the Dungeons and Dragons metaphor where you roll the dice to see how you did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not enough action for me, right? I need one-on-one, you know, like I don't like playing the game, the arcade games, like the one you guys play where you fight each other. Mortal Kombat, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. Yeah,
those are different style of games. Those are side. I forget what they call those sides.
Yeah, head-to-head combat. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Different, like, you know, because all the different game metaphors, and you know, now that you've got the technology to really do these kind of stories, you can take the universe, apply the things that make the thing fun, or the things that people would talk, the Easter eggs, if you want to call it that, right? Like the Pit Boy ring thing that they wear on their wrist, and then all the sort of companies, like there's Vault Tech, are the people who make the vaults, and you know, they make all the technology and stuff like that. But they're like, so that's probably a brand out of the game that survived. And there's a cola company, not Coca-Cola. It looks like Coca-Cola, but it's like Hazard Cola or something like that. I forget what it is. And somebody can fact check us or on that, or just listen to the show. But that brand is in the show, right? So clearly something from the thing. And some of the towns and some of the places they go, I think, are probably from the game. But of course, I don't know the game well enough to know. I was trying to find, you know, if somebody had put together a YouTube video, and they probably have by the time we, you know, next week, right? It'll be everything you wanted to know about Fallout, you know, tie-ins.
Oh, I'm sure, like that, yeah.
But I couldn't find anything. That's why I ended up watching some of the interviews and stuff with people. So yeah, pretty good. Really enjoyed it. I highly recommend this show.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. My second piece is, and this is tied into what we were talking about with stunt doubles earlier, right? I saw this movie come up in I had 24 hours worth of, I had 48 hours worth of air flight time last couple of weeks ago when I went to China. And so I had, you know, there were so many videos and movies to watch. I'd seen some of them and some I weren't. So there was also TV shows. So this show was, I think it's on, might be on Netflix. It's called David Holmes, The Boy Who Lived.
Okay.
And it's a story.
I saw the trailer for this.
Yeah. It's Daniel Radcliffe's body double,
mm-hmm.
like his body, not just a body double, but it's about this kid who was a gymnast and super athlete and, you know, constantly jumping off buildings and climbing trees and whatever, who became a stunt double. And he was Harry Potter, or he was Daniel Radcliffe's stunt double in all the Harry Potter movies, I think up until around the fifth or sixth movie, where he had neck broken in a tragic accident, right? And they don't show the accident, but they show leading up to that accident, right? But because they show all the amazing stuff that he did, he would have done, as you know, all the scenes where he's playing Quidditch, flying around, you know, jumping off, you know, hanging, clutching buildings, you know, getting knocked aside in some of the wizard tournaments that he was in, sort of thing. Obviously, the Goblet of Fire stuff that he would have done, he did that, and then they would have, like, superimposed Daniel Radcliffe's face onto his body, right? But anyway, so he had this accident, broke his neck, and he's now, I mean, he started a podcast last year, I think, and he's now, I want to say, well, he's a few years older than Daniel Radcliffe. I think he was about 15 when he started, and Radcliffe would have been like 7 or 8, right? He's not a very big guy, right? But yeah, he's surviving as a paraplegic, quadriplegic. No, he's got his use of his arms, actually. So he's losing them over time, which is part of the story. So it's a really interesting story about this guy's life and about, and like, he is literally the boy who lived, you know, which is the subtitle of the Harry Potter series, right? And yeah, just amazing to sort of see the relationship he has with Daniel Radcliffe over the years to this day, like, they're, you know, friends and stuff like that, and all how all the other stunt performers, you know, who worked with him, like the guys who, like, the guy literally had to stand, you know, do the stunt that he was hurt in right afterward, and then sort of got to be the main Harry Potter double. He's kind of like, you know, it was really conflicted between having seen his friend who, you know, was his sort of mentor get injured, and now he has to play the role. And it's kind of like, I get to be number one now, but I'm kind of like I, you know, I still respect the guy that got hurt. And yeah, sort of all that sort of conflict around that. So it's a really interesting documentary. I think if you're a Harry Potter fan, and you're not queasy, let's put it that way. I think it's an interesting story about, like, yeah, what happens to these guys, you know, because we see stunt doubles all the time and we just don't know we're seeing them, right? Because they never really get credit. In fact, they were talking about the fact that the only time a stunt double ever won an Academy Award was Brad Pitt in, you know, the latest Tarantino movie, right? So, and yeah, he did give a shout out to the stunt doubles of the world who do this job for real, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the old joke, right? The Fall Guy, right? It was the, you know, I'm the unknown stuntman who makes Eastwood look so fine, you know, like, without these people, without these performers, and they are performers. Like, I think that's the thing that gets lost, right? They are doing part of the performance that engages you in the material. Your performing is just not.
Yeah. It could be CGI, but a lot of times it's an actual guy in a real doing this stuff, right? You know, it's actually somebody being slammed up against the wall or whatever. You would think, you know, oh, they could easily do that with CGI and stuff like that. And they probably did. And I would have thought that some of the Quidditch things, I mean, some of that stuff was definitely CGI, right? And, you know, the Mission Impossible stuff. And anytime you see somebody hurled across a room or whatever, you know, into it, like, you know, there are times when I see things in movies and I'm like, there's no way a person could survive that, right? But
yeah. There's it's funny because as they did mention stunts at the Oscars this year, there was a little thing highlighting the stunt performers and community. And there has been a bit of a call for, you know, why isn't there a best stunts Oscar?
Yeah.
I guess the only concern I have on that front is, you know, obviously safety in stunts, you know, has always been a bit of a murky thing. Generally, you know, reputable studios are doing what they can to do their best to protect these people who are doing the work. And obviously there's a lot of planning that goes into these things, but there have been cases where things have gone wrong and people have been hurt, as you just mentioned. You know, if you incentivize it by adding something like an Oscar to this thing, it doesn't mean you keep pushing and pushing and pushing the envelope and taking risks and other things, right?
I heard a documentary on CBC too, and they were talking to stunt doubles, and there's like the thing where, you know, should I wear a helmet when I'm doing this thing? And we didn't use a helmet when we were in rehearsal, so I won't use one in performing, and, you know, things like that. And then you don't want to complain that you hurt yourself because you won't get the next job, right? Because these, just like actors, they go from role to role, right? And I think it's one of the dangers of this kind of work, and part of the reason why we have SAG-AFTRA and writers unions and actors unions and performer unions and stuff like that is because At the end of the day, they're just people, right? You know, doing a job and but it's not like you get a role in the movie and that's your job for life. It's like you're on contract for this particular time frame, and you know, so in the same way that actors, you know, go from job to job, they're not really James Bond or whatever, all, you know, 365 days a year. They're it's funny, I was watching Rebecca Ferguson was talking about why she left the Mission Impossible series after three movies, right? She said because the role they had given her, the workup they had given her for the character in the latest movie would have meant sitting in the trailer for most of the year, right? And because in their case, a lot of times you're just waiting for shots to be set up, and Mission Impossible is so extravagant, you know, and the sets are so well done and lit and whatever, that she kind of evaluated, like, should I sit in the trailer for a full year for a couple of lines in this movie and getting paid to sit in that trailer, or do two seasons of Silo and two episodes of Dune, you know, and on. That's why she sort of evaluated the, what does Rebecca Ferguson need versus if she wants to work as opposed to, you know, getting paid, right?
Well, and for her too, I mean, her star is rising. She's obviously had some more prominent roles over the past 5 years, including those Mission Impossible ones. For her to set herself out and just work on one thing is actually kind of a missed opportunity. She kind of needs to get herself, you know, out there so people see her work and see her doing things too.
Yeah. But coming back to David Holmes, I definitely think if you're even, I highly recommend it. It's a good movie. It's a bit of a tearjerker, obviously, but, you know, it's not very long. But yeah, it definitely is an interesting story about this amazing, amazing dude who put his body on the line, as it were, right? So.
Yeah, and I remember seeing an interview with Daniel Radcliffe a while back where somebody said, well, you know, you're hanging out with this person to sort of, you know, look good for your image, hanging out with this person who got injured in your movies and stuff like that. And he's like, no, we were friends. We've always been friends. Like, and just because now obviously he's disabled doesn't mean we're not going to be friends. Like, so there's a little bit of cynicism, I think, out there in the world, but, you know, Radcliffe was basically like, no, David was my friend and he's always going to be my friend. And I feel awful that this happened to him, but it's not going to change our fact that we're friends.
Well, and the thing is, it's interesting when you get into this cadre of people, like they support Radcliffe in his work because they're people, they're people first and Harry Potter second kind of thing. Right. And then the other stunt performers are also supportive of each other in their other work too. And David Holmes is supportive of them as well. So it's kind of like it's like an inside baseball kind of pitch, but I mean, pardon the pun, but it's kind of like this is a job that these people do. I mean, the movies don't get lit by themselves. You know, the film doesn't get loaded, like, not that film's loaded into cameras anymore, but it doesn't get loaded into the camera quite itself. The craft services table isn't populated with amazing food by itself. There are people who do this, right? There's so many, like, you know, it's funny because, you know, Jonathan and I and Xavier have a habit of, and I was thinking about this today, I was watching some of the credits. We sit and watch the credits at the end of a movie. Yep. Like, you know, sometimes they're like 10 minutes long.
Yep.
Because even though we don't know these people, it's amazing to see how many people.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's true. But it's amazing to see how many people are in these things. Like, it's funny, as I was flipping by my Apple TV. Apple TV remembers the shows that you want, your watch, and if there's a little bit left, it'll stay in the sort of continue watching kind of queue. And so and Invincible was on there, and I thought, well, that's weird. So let me just go and see what I missed. And it was just the credits rolling. You know, the dude who did Walking Dead is the writer, and Seth Rogen is one of the executive producers, and on and on and on, right? And there's all these other names that don't mean anything to me now, but you know, when you start to see the same names over and over again, or now they're an actor, now they're an executive producer, and as you know, as your star rises in Hollywood, you end up being, you know, executive producer, which means you're taking a piece of the movie, blah 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 blah, but you have more say in what goes on. And but the reality is, like, you know, sometimes you see these epics, like where there's tons of animation and, you know, all kinds of little, you know, like the major battles, like in Lord of the Rings or whatever, which require, you know, 300 animators, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, these people are, that's how many people go into making these things. And I really resent the fact that on Disney and Apple TV doesn't do, does it do as much?
Netflix is the worst. Netflix is like, yeah, let's show you a preview for something else.
Like, yeah, and it's like, screw you, I want to go back and watch the, I want to go back and watch that. Because sometimes, like, you know, even on this show, you know, we'll talk about, oh, did you see the little cliffhangery thing at the very end? Well, sometimes Netflix or whatever decides to skip ahead of that, right, and go to the next episode. There's been a few shows I've watched over the last year, or we've talked about on the show, where you guys have said, hey, did you see the last thing? And I didn't because the titles ended or whatever, right? Or the app interface jumped ahead, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
annoying. But anyway, so we do that to pay respect to the people that do this. Because like you said, we do have friends and family in the industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right.
Over to you.
I got just one thing. So last week we talked about the end of Invincible Season 2, Part 2. You finished watching that? So I think we were waiting for Jaime.
But did.
Since he's not here, we can talk about it without him.
Yeah.
So yeah. This continues to be one of the most exceptional adult cartoons I've ever seen, in that it pulls no punches. And in the last episode really didn't pull any punches because there was a lot of punching. This was a bit of a weirdly paced season because they decided to split it up, obviously tied in with, you know, trying to stretch material due to the strike and other circumstances. But This last episode was an absolute doozy and definitely set the stage for an interesting sort of next phase for season 3. Obviously, I have the background of having read the book since it came out. I was an early in on the comic book and actually wrote a review of the very first series, like first few issues, like right after they came out, and was right on board with it and have adored it all that time. So, you know, so far they've varied from the book a little bit and probably in just some of the decisions on like changing or tweaking the characters a little bit, adding some diversity in, which is certainly welcome. But this battle that we saw in the finale of season 2, where we see Angstrom Levy come and, you know, basically make Mark's life a living hell for a whole episode, mm-hmm. and basically pushes Mark's mind to a breaking point. And obviously there's a huge parallel between this fight and the fight that he has with his father during season 1 about, you know, holding back and not holding back. What do you do? How do you deal with somebody who's hellbent on hurting you? Just really, really compelling television. And to see that coming out of a cartoon, and a cartoon that is taking itself as a cartoon, it's not trying to be, you know, avant-garde. It's not trying to do very realistic. It's bright and it's shiny. It's trying to be Spider-Man in 1966. It's trying to be bright and colorful and still dark in tone and reality and emotion. Stephen Wen's performance as Yoon's performance as Mark or Invincible has been an incredible audio performance. I mean, the emotion that you're hearing, you know, the part where he breaks down after the fight with Levy is, I mean, it's heart-wrenching. It's really, really evocative stuff. And again, in a cartoon that is, you know, it's obviously, it's not the most detailed cartoon and it's not meant to be, to convey that emotion through the voice performance is really exceptional. This is a tremendous, tremendous show.
Yeah, it's good. And Sandra Oh's his mother, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a star-studded cast. It's an incredible cast.
Well, and like you said before, diverse, right? So, I mean, I have to admit that the first couple of episodes of this show for me were a little, I mean, I don't know, dry or whatever, but and the graphic violence it was sometimes a bit too much to take. But mm-hmm. I mean, I stopped watching it until we started recording again this season and you guys had mentioned you wanted to talk about it. So I could, well, let me power through it. And so what is it? Eight episodes, I think.
Eight,
right?
Eighth season. Yeah.
Yeah, so or eight this part of season. I didn't realize
it was four in the fall, as four in November, and then four again this last month and a half.
Okay, well, I didn't finish watching it in November. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I basically finished it off by going back and trying again. And you're right. By the time you get to the fourth or fifth episode, then you want to finish it, right? And the eighth episode kind of came out of left field, although I knew it was a recurring character, right? But yeah, that one kind of took me by surprise in terms of who the ultimate villain would be, right? So because you kept wondering all the way through it, like, and the little brother, because it was one point he ends up when he's going through Portal Man, I've forgotten what you said his name was, the enemy at
Angstrom,
the end,
Angstrom Levy, yeah.
Angstrom. Yeah, he at one point he ends up in the future, and I kind of wondered if his brother would have been grown up by then, you know. But I just wondered, like, since you've read the book, is the brother a continuing character that, you know, grows up and becomes super and all that stuff as well?
Or? Yes. Yes.
Okay. Right.
I won't go too far into spoilers but to say the one thing I really have enjoyed about the way that Robert Kirkman and Ryan Ottley and Corey Walker told this story was that it evolves. Like they never reboot, they never reset, they never take things back. It's always moving forward. And the whole comic series is sort of more or less real time. So the series took 12 years, 13 years to finish. And the time span of that is supposed to be like 12 years. So Mark is supposed to go from being like a 17 or 16 year old kid to being in his late 20s. And so, you know, yeah, his relationships feel true because they take time, his friendships, his nemesis, his like,
yeah, he's in college this year. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in high school in the first season. This one he's in college here. He drops out of college, you know, like, everything kind of builds on each other like real life does in a way that sometimes comics can't do because especially for characters that we're all familiar with, like Spider-Man and Superman and Flash and Green Lantern and all these characters that we know, every once in a while they have to either be softly rebooted or hard rebooted because you just get bogged down with continuity. By having one writer with a beginning, middle, and end of a story can tell this story as they want to. And because Kirkman wrote the whole thing himself, and, you know, obviously in collaboration with Ryan and Corey, he was able to tell this story taking place across this time and keep it all sort of straight. So, you know, when they introduce a character like Oliver, who's his little brother, they, you know, say, well, he grows really quickly. And so he can go from being a baby to a toddler, to a child, to a teenager, and, you know, and be part of Mark's life through that whole thing, which is, you know, again, makes these things much more rewarding. And, you know, it's a great comic book if you want to know where it goes without waiting around for season 3 on Amazon. You can dive right in. They basically have covered the first more or less 30-ish issues so far in the first two seasons. The book, I think, went to 144 plus some side trips on some other tie-in books and stuff like that. So, I mean, in theory, they could run this for a while and tell a pretty robust story if they want to keep it going.
So the Adam Eve thing popped in after this ended. Is that a new season? Because
no, that was a standalone special. They put that out. It came out during Comic-Con last year. They did this sort of origin special. Yeah,
I don't know why it's insisting I watch it again, because I thought I'd seen it.
I know. Right? It did the same thing to me. It was like the autoplay basically kicked in and said, hey, you should watch this. I'm like, but I did watch that. So
yeah, and then now it's going to stick in my Apple TV until I tell it to, like, the Apple TV main menu,
which
ties all of the streaming services that you can attach to Apple TV. And I'm looking at you, streaming services. Will show up in the main menu, but some don't. Like Amazon Prime shows up there. So if I'm watching a series and a new episode comes out, it shows up there. My Netflix isn't tied into my Apple TV, so I don't know if they even talk to each other. Because I have to go into Netflix to sort of see what's going on with it. But the others see, and Crave, I don't think Crave does. Crave maybe does, but I also watch stuff on CBC Gem sometimes. It doesn't tie into Apple TV. Mm. But it's nice that, you know, Paramount or Disney, I don't know about Paramount Plus, but Disney.
Yeah, Paramount Plus does too. I have mine connected through Apple.
Yeah, I don't know if my, I can't remember if I, because I usually just go to Paramount Plus. I only watch a few shows on Paramount Plus, like the Star Trek, and I might start Halo, even though I have no context for it at all. But
yeah,
because I never did play Xbox, right, much. Yeah, cool. All right. You got another one more story here for us?
Yeah, I remembered that I forgot to put this in the headline, so we can cover it off here. Just, I know you're a fan. They have announced that they're...
I'm a sort of fan, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing another season of For All Mankind, and they're also announced a spinoff series. So if you are a fan of this, and I have not yet dipped my toe into this one, I must admit I feel like I'm a little behind, and there's other things I want to catch up on first. But yeah, For All Mankind is getting a yet another season. This will be season, what, 6 or 7?
I thought they were only 5 seasons in.
Yeah, I think this is season 6. Oh, no, return for a 5th season, it says, along with a new spinoff series, Star City, which is supposed to focus on the Soviet side of this story. Obviously, it's stories about the space race in the 1960s, and what if the Soviets had won as opposed to the Americans in the trip first to land on the moon. So, yeah.
Yeah, it covers off a lot of the space program, but it's so far in the future, I guess, that it's no longer connected.
Yeah, now it's kind of like the what if, but it's like way in the future of the what if, right?
And then, but there's a Elon Musk type character in there too, and you know, the only thing's missing is a Donald Trump.
Oh no, I don't think we'd be missing that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like, initially, I was upset with it because I am a space nut and space historian, and it does stretch the timeline a bit, but they do tie in throughout the series to relevant events in the sort of like the technology kind of moves at the same pace that it would have, but now they're kind of like, if you imagine that the space program was never canceled after Nixon got a hold of it or canceled or whatever. I don't think he canceled it because he was there. He was president when they landed on the moon, but Kennedy started it obviously. And, but you know, in after Space Lab, they kind of like nixed it and kept going to the moon. Imagine if they kept going to the moon and kept building on that technology, and then finally got to the point where the Russians and the Americans had to work together, kind of thing, and the Koreans as well, because they're in there as well. But it's now so far in the future, and it's a bit convoluted, and it's kind of like it gets a bit Star Trek-y, you know, Babylon 5-ish, you know, in the later series. But there's also the Soviet-American tensions that never really go away, because there's no glasnost, is there?
Well, it does sound like real life then.
Yeah, except for the fact that the collapse of the Soviet Union hasn't happened yet in the series yet, but or if it's going to at all, but
yeah,
the KGB and all that kind of, if you can imagine all those sort of things. And
well, I talked to somebody who was a fan, and they said, if you're going to take the time to watch multiple seasons of something on Apple TV Plus, watch Slow Horses first before you watch anything else. I was like, yeah, that's what everyone says.
Slow Horses is the probably the best show on Apple TV, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Slow Horses. I mean, it's so good. I'm tempted to go. And there's 5 books, I think, at least, that the guy's written, and each season is a book.
Mm.
Right. So, and Gary Oldman is just off the hook. Yeah. Off the hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the other characters are really good too. And Jonathan Pryce is in there as a sort of side character. But you know, and the machinations between MI5 and this, it's basically the misfits of MI5. Right. What's Slow House is? It's Slough Road House, but they call them Slow House.
Right.
Because that's where they send the rejects. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as @JBKNews or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JBK.
All right. My name is Timitra, TIMMITRA on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, Instagram machine, and all the other machines mostly. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. This is CNN.
What's that? Oh, I just thought the James Earl Jones thing was kind of cool. Oh, wrong show, right?
If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Yeah, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but I was like the day I was sick, I was actually suffering from COVID, but I didn't realize it.
Oh, really? Did you get that? Was that when you went traveling or?
Yeah, I got COVID. I brought COVID back with me from China.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first sign of danger, I mean, I wore my mask the entire time, and then my sister-in-law tells me that my masks are not good enough if you're really exposed to COVID. They're cotton ones, right? Mm-hmm. Need to wear the medical ones,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I wore my mask entire time I was at the airport. So I wore my mask entire time I was on the plane, except for eating. Right. And you're crammed into this plane. It's not terrible, but it's like one of the planes where it's like, you know, three kind of, yep, row, each row, it's huge. And they've plugged up all of the air vents. Right.
Oh, so you're sitting, can't spread. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Can't spread, but then again, you can't filter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you're sitting in a tube for 15 hours with God knows what.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So one person has COVID on that flight. And it's funny because when I got off when I realized after a couple of days of being home that I had COVID, I tried to contact the airline and tell them, hey, and there's no way to do that. You know, so the entire plane could have been infected for all I know. Right. Or I could have picked it up at the conference because I, you know, thought it was maybe, and I did wear my mask at the conference when I was around people, but when I was like in the speakers group, so, you know, I kind of was in the bubble, right? Mm. So I figured it would probably be safe, right? So, yeah, so I don't know why. I'm like, I'm pretty much the only one of the few people at the conference who wore a mask, and I got COVID. So what does that tell you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you do, right?
That sucks.
Yeah. So, but then again, I might have had a confluence flu. Cause when the times that I've tested positive before, I've just felt like I had a head cold. I didn't really felt like knock down, drag him out kind of stuff. And we both had flu shots, but there was a couple of days where I was not, you know, sleeping a lot and stuff like that. But yeah, not fun. Not fun. So wear your mask, kids.
Yeah. Good lesson.
Yeah. And get boosted if you're not boosted, boy.
Yeah, I must admit that's I haven't had a booster for a while. I should.
And I got to try that. So my sister got a hold of some Palovax or
Paxlovid.
Paxlovid, yeah. I take that. That stuff is horrible.
Mm.
I don't know if it was helping me because I was not feeling bad when I because you have to start it within the first 5 days. But your mouth tastes like the inside of a tin can. It's just horrible stuff. Yeah. So, and you can't get rid of the taste, right? So, but yeah, that was, I think, probably the worst part of it.
Yeah.
But it's only, I think you only take it for five days or something like that.
Yeah. Still.
It is what it is. And Carol got it, but she got the illness, but she tested positive. So who knows?
Mm.
Sorry, she tested negative.
Yeah.
Which is a good one. I was positive, she was negative.
Yeah.
And I was so positive when I tested that the little red bar went like red within 3 seconds.
Oh God.
Yeah. Huh. Like I got the good stuff from China.
Yeah, no kidding. Straight from the source?
Straight from the source, yeah. I thought the source was Seattle. I thought we established Seattle
was
ground zero.
Yeah. You know?
All right. Might cut that part of the show. I don't know. Tis what tis.
Indeed.
So my printer has sort of recovered. You get my message about the printer?
No. Oh, your 3D printer. I did get your note about that. Yes.
Yeah. If you guys aren't using it, I could use a second printer. It'd be nice. But
yeah, if you need it, like we really don't have a place for it. That's been half the problem is we just don't have any consistent place to set it up.
Yeah. I just sit here beside my desk, but
yeah.
Yeah. And I use it all the time. Right. So
yep.
Sometimes I'm printing stuff that like I printed something yesterday. It took 11 hours, right? So, but I've been having trouble with it lately, like the last couple of months, right? So I replaced a little, because what happens if the stuff doesn't come out consistently, it doesn't lay down properly and you get really brittle, flaky, you know, prints.
Mm-hmm.
they're not solid, you know? So, and that could be like a dirty nozzle or whatever, but so I went through the process just after I sent you the text message of cleaning it out, and that seems to have fixed it, right? So, because, you know, it's still very much a built by Russians kind of technology, right? Mm. So it's not a point and shoot thing. Like, I think, you know, because I think Chloe and Aruna got a printer, and for them, it was kind of, they thought it would be just plug it in and play, right? But they're not. I mean, it does require a bit of patience and setup and stuff. But once you get used to it, once you get the hang of it, it's just, yeah, you just set it and forget it kind of thing. But so the forgetting it part was not working.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, and you kind of have to stop it and start it again. But yeah, I think I solved the problem, but who knows? Like, and sometimes it's like particular colors for some reason. Like white seems to have a problem lately. I don't know why, but after trying something, I have to try switching back to the white material and seeing if the problem I think I fixed has gone away. I don't know.
I don't know.
If I had this, and the one you have is the upgraded version. I have the parts to make this one the upgraded version, but I haven't got around to it. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can definitely pass that along and say we don't really have a place to set it up right now. So
yeah, and it requires somebody has to be the champion of it, right? To sort of get it to really go, right?
Yeah.
I think that's part of the problem. Let me check my batteries. I'm thinking about it. Magic keyboard needs to be plugged in. Let's do that right now. Got this new fancy keyboard that I got for Christmas, and I hardly ever sit at my desk anymore because of the puppy.
Yeah.
Oh, is it charging? Hang on. I don't see a little charging thing. Where's the other end of this cable? Let me just... Give me a sec. I got to find the back of this cable. Wasn't plugged into the power.
That is a problem.
The power. Yeah, I still haven't recovered all my stuff from my trip to China. Like, I lost all my Canadian cash. I don't know where to put it.
Stuck in a pocket somewhere?
Well, no, I mean, I what I do with them when I'm flying is I have the Ziploc bags. I put the American cash in one and Canadian cash in the other. And in this case, I had to get Chinese yuan. And I had a $20 bill that I carried around in my wallet for like 3 years and a bunch of change and some TTC tokens and stuff. But it's in a bag that I remember holding in my hand, but I haven't seen it since I got back. I don't know what happened to it. It's somewhere.
Yeah.
It'll turn up.
Eventually.
All right. I'll go back to my Steve Martin show and you can go back doing what you're doing.
Yes. I'll have to find something to do.
All right.
All right.
Go start watching Fallout.
Huh? I don't know why, but my QuickTime stopped recording. So, yeah. Yep.
Is your we don't know if it's recording on the
It's recording on here. It's recording the Zoom. I know it's doing that because I can see it's still recording. But I just
looked at it. Because that's pretty much as good as the QuickTime.
Yeah.
If I can get your recording, it would be great.
Yeah, I'll pop it right in now.
All right. Well, I'll stop the shoe and then the Zoom can do the compression thingy or whatever it does.
All righty.
Okay. Bye.
All right, see ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.